Add WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
McMonagle here with you on the Fan. 3 hours down, two more to go on this 5 hour midnight ride as we take you till 5 a.m. and the warm up show. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. Some of the, you know, a positive coming out of the Yankee game, too, is just, I mean, continued as the whole series. I mean, Anthony Volpe's defense, or the defense of the team, let's be fair, besides catcher, which has become a major problem. I mean, Verdugo's defense in the outfield, and I guess Soto made a couple of mistakes in this series. One, apparently, on the broadcast, the one Friday night that led to the run scoring off of the Henderson play. You know, Henderson scores the run after being hit on the retaliation. You know, very important, very important, very important, that retaliation. Thank goodness they did that. I mean, I feel a lot better about that series now that they retaliated, don't you? Isn't that on the forefront of your mind? At least the Yankees retaliated. I feel great about it. I feel really good. I mean, sure, they got their ass kicked. Sure, they lost the series. Sure, that run came around to score in a one-run game that they lost. Sure, you know. Small potatoes. At least they came back and hit Gunnar Henderson in the arm. At least they had their priority straight. That was much more important than actually winning the game, so I'm glad we got that out of the way. Now the O's, you know, leave town, understanding we mean business. So it's good. I'm glad they did that. It was very positive, very positive. But I do have to just mention, real quick, the defense of Anthony Volpe he makes every big-time play. His range is incredible. I mean, we came into this 2 years ago when he started, last year, when he came up, and they decided to make him the shortstop of the New York Yankees. Two things. One, his arm strength was going to be a problem. That's what we were told. And two, Peraza's better defensively. Oswald Peraza's better defensively. But Volpe's a better hitter. He won the camp. They believe in him more. He's going to play shortstop. But ultimately, the best defensive shortstop on the roster is Peraza. And last year, he quieted everybody down by winning the Gold Glove. And I will be the first to admit, while I argued with Evan Roberts about this, because I think Anthony Volpe played excellent defense last year, was very good. And Evan used to say it was a problem for the New York Yankees, his defense. And while I disagreed with that, I would tell you solid defensively, very, very good. Surprised he won a Gold Glove. Surprised he won a Gold Glove. I did not view Anthony Volpe last year as a Gold Glove caliber shortstop. Now, looking around the league, are there other great shortstops? You know, did somebody else have to win it over him? I don't know. But watching him every day, it did not reek, for lack of a better term. It did not feel like we were watching a Gold Glove caliber shortstop. We were seeing just a nice a very good shortstop, a rookie shortstop who hopefully will get better, and boy has he ever. Because right now, I understand how good Gunnar Henderson is. I understand how good Bobby Witt Jr. is. And the idea that these three young shortstops in the American League are probably going to be connected at the hip, much like Willie Mickey and the Duke. I would tell you right now, you can't play better shortstop than what Anthony Volpe is playing. He is utterly brilliant. He's making every play to his left, to his right, in, out, tough throws, quick decisions. Like, he has just been unbelievable defensively. And if you want to talk about, and everybody does, right, as this season is completely falling off, as the wheels have come off, they still have the best record in baseball, but still they're terrible, and it's all going to collapse on them, and it's just like 2022 all over again with the great start, and you could feel it coming. They're going to fold and fade in disaster. What I will tell you is this: the team is better for a bunch of different reasons, and two of them are the defense you are getting at shortstop compared to IKF is not even worth mentioning. And the defense you're getting and just the overall play that you are getting in left field from Verdugo is completely different. Those were glaring, gaping abysses of both defense and offense. I mean, it was a disaster area. And while this team clearly has holes and has not played well for the last week, and come trade deadline, bullpen arms are a must, probably a corner infielder, either third or first. I doubt both, but either third or first is starting to look like a must. I do believe that Brian Cashman will go out and get it. But whatever he gets, and he'll get something, this team is not the team of 2 years ago. It's not. And look no farther than the defense at a premium defensive position like shortstop that you're getting from Anthony Volpe compared to the defense you were getting from IKF. And then look at left field and Aaron Hicks and Joey Gallo and the disaster that was the left field position last year. And, 2 years ago, and then last year was even worse. Franchy Cordero, Jake Bowers, Billy McKinney. Those two players, the defense they play and the offense they bring, dramatically change and make me feel so much better, no matter what happened against the Orioles, that this team is not going to fade and collapse down the stretch. Now, I don't know. The Orioles are damn good. Yankees might not win the division. They're already behind the eight ball with the Orioles, losing five of the first seven. They're going to have to turn that around the next, I think they played 13, so they got another six games coming. They're going to have to figure out a way. But right now they're a half a game up, and for anyone concerned that this team is falling like the 22 team, just look at those two positions plus Juan Soto and tell me this team isn't different. It is. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Maury in Belmore. What's up, Maury?
Tonight is your night, bro.
Tonight is your night, bro!
Before I get to my Duke Schneider Martini point,
yes.
I want to say a couple of things. I'll just bring it out. He liked martinis with pickle juice. Read it. I don't understand it, but pickle juice. I never heard anything like it.
Duke Schneider did?
Duke Schneider, pickle juice in his martini.
Interesting.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, I mean, so I could see that. You know, olive juice, something briny.
Odd thing.
You could see it.
Odd. And then let me talk to you about the biggest liability right now on the Yankees.
Sure.
Not the pitching. Did you see the first play of the game where Soto, the ball went over his head?
Yeah.
Okay. We have a defensive situation for the Yankees. Volpe's great. Verdugo's great. Everyone else stinks.
I completely disagree.
What do you mean? First baseman, second baseman? Well, the first baseman's hurt. Yeah. He's been horrible.
Rizzo's been down. He's not, here, and we'll see what Ben Rice is. Yeah, I mean, but it hasn't cost you yet, and now LeMahieu there is perfectly fine.
But this is
judging center field is an excellent center fielder.
That's also a plus. But
and Soto blew two balls. Soto threw guys out at the plate. Soto's made most every play. Soto's not great defensively, but besides that play yesterday, it's not like he cost the Yankees at all this season. What about the throws at the plate that he won games with?
Yeah, that was good. The beginning of the season.
Okay.
I haven't seen anything since. Let me ask you another question.
Yeah.
Hold on. The first play of the game, or the payback.
Yeah,
we could have won two games out of this series if we didn't pay back.
Oh, that's not fair. They lost 17-5. I understand it's the first play of the game. You can't. I mean, come on. They lost 17-5.
I feel like you're giving them a pass right now. I feel like they're underachieving right now. I know they're in first place, but just key positions on defense is what makes me concerned about this team.
The bullpen makes me concerned. The catching position certainly makes me concerned. Overall defense and Juan Soto, I mean, we knew what he was and what he isn't, and he's certainly not a Gold Glove caliber outfielder. The other line drive, and they said it on the broadcast, had a 20% catch rate. He got spun around on a hard line drive. This one was clearly he got completely just mixed up on a hard line drive.
Yeah.
But he has not been I'm sorry. I've watched every game. I do not think Juan Soto has been a defensive liability other than these two plays in this series. In fact, I've been pleasantly surprised with the defense Juan Soto has played. Verdugo is arguably the best left fielder in the sport, and
agreed.
And Soto and Judge in center is perfectly fine. And third base has not been a problem. Shortstop's excellent. Gleyber Torres is prone to the blunder here or there, but I do, and a lot of times it comes from laziness or whatever, but or perceived laziness, but I think he could still make great plays. And first base, we'll find out. LeMahieu, if he's there, is fine. Overall, I don't think they're a bad defensive team. Listen, they have holes, I agree with you, and they're underachieving, certainly, against the East and against Baltimore specifically, no doubt. But
I got one more point.
Yeah.
The conversation with Duke Schneider before, didn't it remind you of coming to America in the barbershop? Every time, you
know? Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I know. Man, you ain't never met no Frank Sinatra. Bruce in Flushing. What's up, Bruce?
Hey, Chris. Hey. A couple of Yankee points and a Ranger point, if I can.
Sure.
First on the Yankees. All these fans who are thinking the world's coming to an end with the Yankees, don't they know their history? I mean, don't they realize in 1978 we were 13 and a half games back?
Tell them, Bruce. They don't know about 1978.
I mean, you know.
They don't know about Bob Lemon.
I don't want to sound like an old fogey, but the overreaction in the media, his fans is one thing, but the media overreacts. I mean, the article by John Heyman saying Yankees showing cracks. Yeah, there's a couple of little cracks.
Well, I mean, that's fair.
But we do have the best record in the American League.
Still do. Well, I mean,
you know,
I mean, there are certain people who go strictly on the loss column, and I do believe now Baltimore has less losses, but overall we're a half a game up on them. So right now in percentage points too, let me double check.
Right.
We are exactly tied in percentage points, and they have one less loss and the Yankees have two more wins.
Barring
injury, tied with Baltimore is the best record in the American League.
Barring injury, and that's always a wild card,
yeah.
The Yankees and Baltimore could be battling down the whole season.
No doubt.
So Yankee fans, chill a little bit. Okay.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, listen, there are still problems and they need to get them fixed. And I do believe they got embarrassed in this series over a couple of different reasons. But that doesn't change the fact that you're right. They're still very damn good. They're going to improve. And this series, ultimately, it might affect the standings, but if they get into a series, if they're playing in the ALDS against each other, this series isn't going to matter very much.
Now, to correct some of the problems, I got two names to throw at you.
Yeah.
Tanner Scott in the bullpen. He can be the setup guy.
Yeah.
And when the closer can't go, he can fill in the closer. And for third base, Gio Urshela. Now, I don't know if Brian Cashman is willing to admit he made a mistake and bring him back, but he's hitting .280. Good glove. Would be perfect third baseman.
I don't know. I don't love retreads. I'm not opposed to it necessarily. I never like the idea of bringing guys back. It just very seldom works. Let me see what he's doing. I know what you just said he was doing, but I just want to make sure. Gio Urshela he's hitting .284. He's got an OPS of .687. He's got two home runs and 19 RBIs. He's played in 47 games, so he's missed some time with injury. I'm not opposed to it. I don't know. I don't think it makes them that much better, to be totally honest with you. I don't think it makes them that much better. Rengifo's having a better year. And the Tigers would probably be willing to trade him, but they're not out of it. I mean, they're not completely out of it. They're not having they're actually playing pretty well. They've done a nice job this year. I don't know if they'd be willing to sell. I'm sure they probably, you know, would be on some level, especially, you know, if they get closer and continue to lose. But right now, they are 6.5 back of the wild card, the Minnesota Twins. They are 6 games under .500. I mean, they'll probably sell. Certainly, they'll sell a Gio Urshela. I think he signed a 2-year deal, right? So they'd have him for next year. I don't think it was a 1-year deal. It might have been a 2-year deal, but I just don't like the idea of retreads. I just don't know. It never works out when he comes back. I'd rather go get someone different. Howard in Forest Hills. What's up, Howard?
Yeah, hi, Chris. You were talking about the cameos?
Yes, I was. Movie cameos, okay. Yes.
Okay, so the one who always impressed me was Alfred Hitchcock. He always put himself in his own films. Like, if it was a train scene, he would be a passenger on a train, or a street scene, he would be walking by him, the protagonist in that.
That's very, very cameo. I think I meant a little bit more of a role of some substance, just not... necessarily like a supporting role, like someone who's in just a scene or like, but something a little bit more than just a passenger on a train.
I just wanted to give you I thought his best cameo, right? There was a movie he made called Lifeboat, right? So they have survivors in a lifeboat.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that ship was torpedoed by a German U-boat.
Okay.
And Hitchcock wasn't a passenger or a survivor. So the way he got around it, right? There was a newspaper on the boat, and it was a photograph of Hitchcock in the newspaper, and I thought that was his best cameo.
Yeah, that's funny. In that vein, Stan Lee, the creator of a lot of the Marvel comic books, he was in a bunch of cameos. Like he would be the man on the street, say something. That would be similar to the Alfred Hitchcock, like you're talking about. I mean, legitimate actors in legitimate scenes, with just like one, for some reason I saw it the other day for a little bit, that the Hugh Grant movie 9 Months and Robin Williams plays their doctor when they're having the baby, like things like that, where it's like, he's in the movie. It's a scene or two, but it's one of the better parts of the movie. Not like, walking down the street. Paul in Hartford. What's up, Paul?
Hey, what's up, Chris?
What's going on?
Yeah, listen to you year-round. I only call in when it's strictly baseball season and we're out of the way with the NHL and NBA. But
yeah, well, we certainly really we'll get into the NBA as the season, the offseason has now begun, and what the Knicks need to do to get better, and obviously what's going on, the idea of Brunson signing an extension now and saving the team a ton of money, which would be, just add it to the list of why Brunson's great. But go ahead, what's your call?
No, the one thing I will say is I only call in because I do love baseball, and I will say this. I'm up all the time, all night, unfortunately, and like you. But I do appreciate all the old-timers when they come in with all these baseball comments and old school stories of baseball, and that I love that, and I think I'm about your age, but those guys who always call in and they're up all night, and those guys all around New York, I really appreciate that. I love that. So just for the I just want to say that.
No, well, great. Well, thank you. Yeah, no, they can be fun. It can be a little tedious at times, but it can be fun depending on how much. Like that guy, I really bothered with just being dismissive, like for a half a second, of Duke Snyder. Very upset with me. Very, very upset. I don't know what to tell you, buddy. Like, let's be honest. I wasn't around. I have no idea. No idea. I wasn't alive. I didn't see them play. I was unaware that he led the decade in home runs. I was unaware that he had more home runs in the 50s than anyone else. But, if you're going to try and tell me he was as good as Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle, I just, he wasn't. He was the third of those three. That's all. Great Hall of Famer. Great. Great player. Just he's the third of the three. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. Actually, that's the guy just mentioned the Knicks. And as you try and figure out what they're going to need to put this team together, whether they run it back, whether they're willing to make a move for a star, if that's even plausible, whether it's, either one of the guys in Phoenix or Butler or whoever else may become available, or just bringing it back and putting it together. But the idea that Brunson is up for a contract extension, and the difference between the amount of money that he could make if he signs the extension this year and the extension next year is damn near $100 million. And the idea that he's willing to do it, and that right now the story is, I mean, Ian Begley's reporting and different people are reporting that it's likely that this guy is going to forego his max contract next year for another year and about $100 million more, that he's going to be willing to forego that to sign the extension this year to help this team build around him is there anybody in sports who gets it more than Jalen Brunson? Like, honestly, is there anybody in sports who gets it more than him? Whether it's the note to the fans, which, you know, depending on how you view it, can be cool, can just be whatever. I think it's incredibly respectful and just to be thoughtful of the fans as the postseason's about to start, to put out that letter. And then, you know, just the way he reacted to everything. And then to be willing, much like Tom Brady, who you know how I feel about Tom Brady, and I kill him every chance I get. And yeah, it's easy when your wife's a supermodel and making, you know, more money than you. But still, the guy turned down, he was the most winning quarterback in the NFL long before he retired. And the amount of money he forewent to make sure he had pieces around him. And now to see that Jalen Brunson, who has transformed the Knicks, who has emerged, who went from not making the All-Star team last year, being snubbed 2 years ago and being snubbed, to, you know, being snubbed from the Olympic team or whatever else, and being undervalued and questioned, and Dallas didn't want to keep him, and then they recognized the mistake. That was relatively quickly, or whatever the case may be. But this guy's journey to get where he is right now as one of the stars of this league, the face of this Knicks franchise on a level we haven't seen since Patrick Ewing. I mean, everything about this guy. And now he's going to be willing to forego all this money to make sure he has the best chance and this team has the best chance to win. I mean, what else can this guy do? Between the 40-point games in the postseason, between changing the franchise. But, I mean, just... And now... If he does this, and again, he hasn't done it yet, but if he extends in this offseason and this team is able to figure out a way to obviously use that extra money in their benefit to bring in another star or another transformable player that they've clearly had an eye for, and the Knicks have done an incredible job and Leon Rose has done an incredible job putting this team together and recognizing talent and understanding how his coach coaches and having that kind of relationship where player meets system in such a way that it's, you know, almost unmatched, really, in the NBA. Not as talent, not as good. Obviously, they didn't even make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, and that's a lot to do with injuries, but still, like, but the ability to go out there and put a team together for the coach and play a style of basketball that is unique and different inside this NBA and the minutes they play and everything else that's gone on with the New York Knicks and just the joy they have brought a fan base that has been just besieged by horrendous basketball for way, way, way too long. And for him to recognize that, recognize the fans when he didn't have to, and now be on the precipice of foregoing $100 million to make sure this team can be as good as it can? To take that kind of personal haircut? I mean, the guy is just... I mean, unfortunately, you know how I feel. He can't be the king of the city because that resides with number 99! But Jalen Brunson is as transformative and a player and as dynamic a scorer and as great a teammate and as unbelievable a superstar that this team could ever have asked for. It's just crazy. Now, we'll see if he does it. I'm giving him all his flowers and he could turn around and say, no, I'll wait a year. But it sounds like he might actually do this. How can this... I mean, this guy needs to be praised every second of the day. I don't want to hear one negative thing. If I took a couple of calls when I mentioned Jalen Brunson a few days ago about his lack of defensive skills. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear anything. The guy is my hero. 327, McMonagle here with you on the Fan. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. Come back, take your phone calls. Continue to talk baseball if you want to talk Knicks. If you want to talk Mantle, Mickey, and the Willie, Mickey, and the Duke, we could do that. You crazy. You want to talk cartwheel? Oh, by the way, I forgot. We got to talk about the cartwheel flying saucer bit because it's a resounding victory. Resounding victory for flying saucer.
Happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
The most successful team in the history of professional sports. Starting the new millennium, the New York Yankees are once again world champions.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 1019 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
McMonagle here with you on The Fan, rocking with you until 5 a.m. in the warm-up show. So we've spent a little bit talking about old-school baseball as obviously the passing of Willie Mays the other day and the game last night at Rickwood Field, Alabama. And, you know, we always talk about how great the players were back then or whatever, and anytime you mention that, you know, players, for some reason it comes up with Babe Ruth a lot. If you say anything about the idea that Babe Ruth would struggle in today's game, it's like a big deal. And so I found this funny in the pregame. They're talking with Ken Griffey Jr. and Barry Bonds, and they're talking about obviously all the, you know, the all great Negro League players like Satchel Paige. And so they're talking about it, and Jeter asks a question to Barry Bonds, and his answer is probably accurate.
Tell me right now, on the spot, what would you do against Satchel Paige?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Gone. You have lost your mind, Jeter. Gone. Simple. Gone.
And he probably would have, knowing the fact that, especially right around 2001 to 2004, where every strike he saw, he had a home run. But, like, it bothers people. It's going to bother, you know, some of the callers. Like, the athletes today, particularly in baseball, because they throw the ball so much hard. It's just a different game. Like, if Satchel Paige came to play in this league, I would imagine he would struggle. If Babe Ruth came up and tried to hit in Major League Baseball today, he wouldn't know what the hell to do with himself.
Like, that doesn't... You'd say, what's a sweeper?
Yeah, I mean, a sweeper, yeah. He would not be able to catch up to a fastball. It's a different world, but somehow that upsets people. And Barry Bonds there is he's the greatest hitter of all time. Nobody was ever better than Barry was during that time period. You want to say it's because he was cheating? Clearly it was.
Look at the three of the guys on that stage. You have A-Rod, yep, Bonds, and David Ortiz.
Right. All of them. People forget that David Ortiz was found on that list. Nobody cares.
It bothers Jeter and Griffey when they're sitting up there with those guys?
Yeah, probably. On some level, it probably does. Although I think it went okay for both of them. I don't know how many regrets they have. I think Jeter's lived a pretty damn good life. But yes,
Well, you saw the video of this too, right? Because yeah. Griffey looks annoyed at Barry Bonds' response, but had Jeter asked him, like Ken Griffey Jr. is one of the best ever. He's confident. He's probably like, is he going to just be humble there and say, you know, it'd be a tough battle?
Yeah, I don't know.
Griffey would also hit a ball out of the park.
That's what I think. If you watch, I think Griffey got annoyed because he kind of asked it to both of them, and Bonds just like, me? Oh, I, you know, gone. Like, I think it was like he hijacked the question. I don't know. But like maybe the whole segment was like that, where Bonds was the one doing most of the talking. But which is funny because you can't find the guy. I mean, you know, doesn't do a lot of stuff. But, I mean, yeah, that's very funny. And, you know, we could talk about the old school players. It's still right now. And that's why when I say Judge's, you know, one of the greats of all time, I don't have a problem saying it because he's doing it in an era where, I'm sorry, it's harder to hit now than it's ever been before. And when I say this, I get calls about, well, I mean, what's center field in Yankee Stadium now? 410? Do you know what it was in 1947? It was 457 feet. Do you know how many long fly ball? Yeah, okay. I get it. Do you know the difference? You know how many times in Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak he faced the same starting pitcher four or five times? You know how many times today you get that? You know how many times they bring out a guy out of the bullpen just for you who throws, you know, if you're a left-handed hitter, comes out throwing these left-handed sliders, seeing them for the first time in the game. Like, it's just, it's a different specialized, different sport. It's harder to hit today than it's ever been before. I don't think there's any doubt in that. And so, yeah, would Bonds dominate? Sure. Would players of that era come here and struggle? Sure. Now, great athletes are great athletes. Do I think if they were born and raised here, like if Babe Ruth were happened to be born in 1998, I think he'd be a major leaguer. But you can't just take him straight off the field in 1927, bring him here and expect success. Like, I don't know why. It's almost a silly argument, but people get all hung up on it. But that was one of the videos that made me laugh. Barry Bonds taking Satchel Paige deep. And I remember HBO did a movie on Jackie Robinson. And I guess, I mean, I've read about it subsequently, but in the movie they talk about Satchel Paige would pull his team off the field and challenge a player with no defense where a ground ball hit hard enough was an inside the park home run. He would pull all his defense off the field. I mean, that was, I mean, talk about enjoying, you know, watching a baseball game and the fun that they had with it. Amazing. And it was a good event. I saw some of the end of it. Again, I was with my son playing football. I didn't get a chance to see the whole thing, but the other sound making the rounds that's out on social media. If you get a chance to see it, you should. Reggie Jackson, really very poignant, and you know, talking about his time playing in Alabama and the difficulties of, you know, playing baseball as a black man there in that time period and what he had to go through, what it was like. I mean, you can feel it as he speaks, how real it is, and, you know, the impact it had on him. And it's just, it's hard to fathom how those men went through it and how they persevered and, you know, became some of the greatest players to ever play the game through all of that. It's really remarkable. I mean, especially, I'm just like, and even later, you know, Hank Aaron trying to break records and dealing with what he dealt with. I mean, it's just, it's hard to fathom. Hard to fathom. Mark in Sheepshead Bay. What's up, Mark?
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. First of all, I wanted to say thank you. As a teacher, gets up early every day to get ready for work. You make it a lot easier getting ready in the morning. It's really good listening to you each morning.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's good to know there are people out there, you know, ironing their pants and their underwear listening to me, and I'm making it easier for everyone. That's good to know. Thank you.
No ironing the pants and the underwear for me, but I remember that guy, so that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Of a guy who called earlier. I happened to be up even earlier than usual this morning. Yep. And I heard the guy calling you, chastising you about disregarding Duke Snyder.
Yes.
And it made me think of a great story with my dad, who grew up a Brooklyn Dodger fan, and he was a lifelong Dodger fan. And the only time he ever set foot in Yankee Stadium was the first game after Mickey Mantle died. He wanted to go and pay respects, so I took him to the game. And I'll never forget it, because I don't know if you were at that game, but it was hot as blazing. It was in Oakland, and McGuire actually hit a home run that landed right in Monument Park. And the other thing I'll never forget about that day is they gave out these tribute cards to Mickey Mantle. And my father was always with his college shirts and, you know, even going to the game. And he carried his pills in the same pocket, in the front pocket, and he put the card in there. And when we got home, about the seventh inning, when he had to take one of his pills, he noticed that the card was all of a sudden with a big orange stain. It was so hot that the pill melted into the card. He still has the card to this day.
That's funny. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was hot there this weekend, so it can get hot. But yeah, that's I didn't go. But what year? It was 95, right? He passed away, Mickey Mantle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
I wasn't there. I remember it. Again, that was my dad's guy, and I told the story about getting him the plaque 500 Cub. Like an idiot, I didn't recognize the club was misspelled. There was no L in it. And they still sold it to me. Taking advantage of a young child. Shame on them. Shame. But yeah, I remember when he passed away and my father's reaction to it. And just the stories he would tell about Mickey Mantle. And the way his eyes would light up. And that's, I don't know if we'll ever get that again in some ways, in some aspects. Where everything's televised and you can watch anything you want and every replay and you see every player and you don't have to read the box score to find out what happened and the connection and the superhero feeling that those players had. They've become, as much as they make all this money and everything, and the difference between us and them, but it's almost like they've become more humanized and less superhero-like because we see them all the time. You watch the post games. Like, it's just, it's different. They switch teams all the time. Like, Mickey Mantle felt like, to my father, at least when he would talk about it, as something more significant than just a baseball player. And I think that's kind of evaporating. And in some ways, it's a shame. And others, it's just life. But that was definitely special. And I have a special connection to Derek Jeter and a special connection to Paul O'Neill and a special connection to Bernie Williams and those players of those teams that won championships as I was growing up. And it just felt like they were going to win the World Series every year. I mean, that's how it felt to a 13 and 14-year-old. Like, that's how it felt. They were going to win the World Series every year. Or at least go to the World Series every year. I remember I was in 14, 15, even older than that, I guess. Yeah, because I remember 2002, I was in college when they lost to the Angels. And I was just like, what? They lost in the first round? Like, it was hard to fathom. I mean, it's a different, right now we're all upset that they lost. I mean, I don't even remember. I do remember in 2000 where they faded down the stretch. They had this terrible September. They ended up only winning 87 games. It was like they won the division because the Red Sox were terrible that year, and they won the division with 87 games. And it was just, they were awful down the stretch. And if it wasn't for David Justice, they probably it was just a terrible end of the year. And I remember getting a haircut. And the barber was a Met fan. This guy, Tom, used to cut my hair. And he had old pictures of Mets and everything. And they were already in the World Series before the Yankees got to the World Series. And he was just like, you're going to keep up your end of the bargain. I remember him saying that to me. I was just like, I don't know. Yeah, of course, we're the Yankees. Like, there was no doubt. They won 87 games. They failed down the stretch. They were playing, the A's who had all these wins. Seattle had all these. It was like, but it didn't matter. It didn't matter. That Yankee team was going to win the World Series. That's how it felt. And now the fan base and the vitriol, and it feels like the opposite to a lot of fans. It doesn't matter what they do. Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, it doesn't matter. They can't beat the good teams. They're going to fall on their face. It happens the same time every year, Chris. Like, it's just, how could you possibly have hope? It's all they do is suck. I don't care how many wins they have. They can't beat the Dodgers. They can't beat the Orioles. This team is awful. They can't, the bullpen sucks. You expect this team to compete. What a freaking loser you are. You're such a homer. Can you imagine? Like, that's what it is. Because they haven't won since 09, so you can't fathom it. But it was different. It was different in 1999 and 2000. They were going to win the World Series. They were going to win every game. We got to get back there. Got to figure out a way to get back there. But it was a struggle this weekend. They got embarrassed. They got absolutely embarrassed. And I'm still hung up on it. I'm sorry. I know a lot of things happened between the end of that series and what happened the other night. But part of the reason that I'm embarrassed about this, yeah, they got pounded 17-5, embarrassing. Embarrassing. They got taken out back, embarrassing. The catcher threw a ball into left field, embarrassing. That cost them a game, embarrassing. They couldn't bring out a reliever who could, you know, get a single out in this game. Embarrassing. They're pitching Trevino at the end. Embarrassing. Throwing at 73 miles an hour. He actually threw a knuckleball harder than he does the second base on a stolen base attempt. But you know what really embarrassed me? What really embarrassed me is how they handled the retaliation thing with Aaron Judge. It was embarrassing. It was absolutely embarrassing. The idea that the fan base was clamoring for it at such a level was pathetic. And you want to? I think it's reversed. I think everyone who called people like me, who didn't want to retaliate, who didn't think it was necessary off of one pitch that got away and hit Aaron Judge, they're calling us soft. It feels like the Yankees hitting Henderson comes off soft. It just does. It comes off pathetic. It comes off like, oh, you know, we can't tolerate one single pitch getting away to Aaron Judge. Meanwhile, the Yankees have hit the Baltimore Orioles more than the Baltimore Orioles have hit the New York Yankees. It's just, even before all this, heading into that game at the start of the series, it just felt so pathetic. And then they have to respond. The guy scores one. He gets on base. He ends up coming around and scoring on a misplay by Soto. They end up winning the game by one run in extra innings and then pound them. And everybody's applauding the O's for getting hit and walking to first base. Gunnar Henderson, he's only 25 years old. He's shown more confidence and more maturity than the veteran New York Yankees. And it's true. The way they handled this was pathetic. It just felt pathetic. And how do you feel now? For everyone that you said they had to retaliate. I wanted to win the game. Do you think it matters now? Like, leaving the series, do you feel better that they actually retaliated? Do you feel better that Gunnar Henderson took one off the tricep? Does that make you feel better? You happy leaving the series, getting pounded, losing that game in extra innings by one run when you're putting on runners? Is that what you want? The whole thing was just pathetic. It really was. And the fan base clamoring for it too. I'm sorry, ridiculous. It doesn't do anything, and it wasn't warranted at all. And it comes off as pathetic. You can't just take it. The guy took an inside fastball. He took one off the hands. He almost got hurt. I get it. It sucks. It's a part of baseball. The Dodgers aren't going to throw at the Royals. I found two plays just the other day of divisional opponents. Pittsburgh Reds. Where Ke'Bryan Hayes went down, got one off the hands. They didn't have to retaliate. Nolan Arenado writhing in pain on the floor. The Cardinals didn't have to retaliate. And it's the same thing. It's just not the Yankees and Orioles. Two divisional teams competing in the middle of a very contested and bungled up National League wild card race. But no, the Yankees, because it's Aaron Judge, have to retaliate. Okay. They retaliated. How'd it go? We feel better about it? We feel like, hey, at least we stood up for ourselves? Or do you feel like we got embarrassed? The whole thing embarrasses me. This whole weekend was embarrassing. But that's what really bothers me. What really bothers me is the ridiculous idea that the Yankees were somehow soft unless they threw it. And they laughed at us. Like, they took it. He went to first. He scored a run. They win by one run in the game. And then they turn around and just absolutely pound the best pitcher the Yankees have had all year. But hey, at least we retaliated. At least we let them know, hey, you don't come in here and mess around with us. Great. Great. It's really changed the whole dynamic of this relationship between the Yankees and the Orioles. It's completely different. They get it now. They're not going to pitch Judge inside. Hell, Judge played the game and hit a home run opposite field. Maybe it worked. Right? They didn't come inside. They threw a fastball over the plate. He hit one oppo. Turn this whole thing around. So dumb.